October 7, 2020, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Happy Wednesday. Brother Matt at the Love Grotto, Pleasure Point, a couple miles south here because we're still in quite quarantino mode. But through the miracles of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention, I got Ryan from Ryan and Pony with me. Pony's going to show up soon. But right now, it's Man Alone with Man Alone here in Pedro. Welcome aboard, Ryan.
Hey, great to be here. And I saw Pony's car just pull up, so she'll be here in minutes.
Okay, so started the show off with John Coltrane doing Mating Call. Then Ryan and Pony would Be Still, My Baby. And I guess since you're there now, Ryan, you go first. What's your earliest musical recollection, please?
My earliest musical recollection would be sifting through my dad's record collection. So he didn't have a huge stash of records, but he did have albums from Bob Dylan, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, the Kinks, the Beach Boys, and then a large amount of folk music as well. He was into everybody from Leo Kottke to Buffy Marie St. Clair, and that was my introduction to music because that was the first thing that I was exposed to. So just kind of crawling around, looking at records, looking at the photos on it, looking at the artwork.
So this is at your pad. Now, where was this?
What's that? Oh, this would be at my parents' house, like growing up. This is like as, I guess, as early as I can remember.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But where is the pad?
Ah, okay. So it would have been in Minnesota. My parents lived in the east side of St. Paul and also later moved to Montana.
Okay, in that pad you grew up in, was there just, were they listeners or was there some instruments?
So my dad actually played guitar. He came from a super musical family. And my mom keyboard and piano and sang, but again, as like a hobby, she was just kind of a casual musician, but both of them came from highly musical families.
So there was musical instruments in the pad you grew up in.
There was, my dad had a guitar. Yeah, it was questionable. Like it was hard to play, but it was a guitar and there was a piano. There's always a piano.
Well, did you jump on either or both?
Yeah, both. Yeah. I started playing piano. And my aunt was actually a piano teacher. And she taught me how to play some things. And as far as guitar goes, I pretty much just picked it up and fumbled around on it for a while, you know, just moving one finger around until I figured out certain sounds and things. But in the earlier stages of exploring music, that's what it was. Yeah, it was basically just...
What about school? Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
Yeah, not... Well, let's see. I guess I was in, like, probably, like, choir in like junior high, maybe I don't know what grade it was. Not once you could select what you were in. It's not that I didn't like choir, it just wasn't my thing. But I did start in the school band program, and that was like a huge turning point for me because I played trombone. You know, it doesn't seem like the most glamorous thing, but
oh bullshit, bone is fucking bass clef. Right. It's bass clef.
I agree with you. See, like, yeah.
And so, I heard from my friends told me in the marching band, it's a little bit easier because of the big mouthpiece.
Yeah, it is. It's probably easier than, like, I also played tuba later. So I was in the low brass thing, and the rush I got from playing was just absolutely incredible. Like, I couldn't believe that we were making the sounds we were making. I was just grinning ear to ear. It was just like, I couldn't believe it. Because that was the most real thing I'd ever done, making music with other people, and it just blew my mind. So that was a game changer. At that point, I knew exactly what I was going to be doing for the rest of my life.
So you learned how to read bass clef.
Yeah.
Okay, what I'm talking about is when you're marching in those big wool suits and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it's bouncing, right? So if you got a bigger mouth, I heard the French horn and trumpet, it's a lot tougher because the little mouthpiece to make the embouchure.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Okay, that's why I said that. And the neat thing too about the bone is microtones, like a stand-up bass.
Oh, yeah, right.
Glissandro, I think.
Yeah, yeah, because you can move that slide, and your embouchure can change it just a little bit, so you can go just slightly sharp, slightly flat.
Yeah, right. There's no frets, right? No, like no step. Yeah. That's why Leo called his 1951 bass guitar invention a precision, because it had frets.
Oh, that makes sense. I did not know that. That's cool.
And that's why I wanted you on the show, so I could enlighten you to that, Ryan.
Yeah.
Ryan, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
I bought two albums with my own money. They were Prince, the Batman soundtrack, and Warehouse Songs and Stories by Husker Du.
Yeah,
Both Minneapolis artists. And, you know, at the time, like, Batman and Prince were, like, the coolest things, you know, to me. So
you know about this
album,
record called Land Speed Record?
What's that?
Land Speed Record.
Yeah, Land Speed Record. That's an amazing album. I've got that.
Me and D. Boone put that out. We put out the first Husker Du album.
I forgot about it. I didn't know that.
1981. What was the first gig you went to, Ryan?
The first gig, like for sure. First one I remember buying tickets for would have been.
Have to buy tickets. I just want to know, like, the first time you saw live music.
I saw Sugar live Bob Mould. I also saw Midnight Oil around that same time, and I can't remember which one was first, but it was one of those.
How do you pronounce this, Ryan?
Melismatics.
Melismatics. Okay, I want to play Can't Relate.
They say it makes no sense to me. I don't care. Pythagoras said, avoid the weasel. Life is a poor host, grabbing guests who came too late. In great pleated heavenly sheets draped from fixed stars, leaving tear-stained party coils streaming to their last cars, drunk in spirit and some on twilight's twisted cane of fate.
Thank you. gravity flag, tricorder, immortality drum, colonies on Mars.
Still. I'll put it in an email.
All the stress, BS, wherever you load them. Take them out the door.
potion. Learned when you learn. Sessional approach.
Between my bones and skin, this is my.
A Watt for Pedro Show, Can't Relate, by the Melismatics. Wild Rats after that with Hot Shot, that's me and Thurston, Steve Shelley, along with, of course, Ron Ashton, doing a film. Well, it was a bunch of tunes while we were doing a session for, what was it called, Velvet Goldmine, 1997. Charlie Plimel after that with Pythagoras, said poem, Charlie from Cherry Valley, New York. Deerhoof, brand new stuff, Love Lord, number two. Whack Whack Kingdom, that's Shige in Berlin, Brother Shige, with Don't Be a Zombie. And Wag Platy, Uzukuma Rumono, Uzukuma Rumono, yeah, sorry for fucked up pronunciation. We Are the Asteroid out of Austin with Email, from their latest. Model Home out of D.C., Two Right, that's T-U-U. Venus de Milo, okay. This is television when they still had Dick Hale in the band, 1974, making a demo for Brian Eno. Aloha Screwdriver, they were on the show last month. Downhill Park, I think, from Oaktown. The Hawk from Iowa City, right? Jay, who lives there? Dan. Got that drummer man that we used to play with the Run Westies. You know something about the Run Westies, the three brothers.
Yeah.
And then finally, Orion and Pony with Thunder Love. As I Don't Know by the Hawk. Okay, so Pony's there. She wants to jump in with her journey through music?
Yeah, she does.
Sure.
Well, you know the drill, Ryan. Tell her. Ask her. What's your earliest musical recollection?
What was your first? Yeah, what was your first introduction into music?
Or your earliest memory of music?
My dad always listened to music all the time. Like, the radio was on 24/7. And then I always wanted a guitar. I have an older half-brother. He's 10 years older. He had a guitar around, and I always was obsessed with it. He never, ever played it, though. And he would never let me touch it. And then some neighborhood friends were taking piano lessons, so they'd show me anything that they learned. And I remember, like, one of the first songs was, like, the Young and the Restless, like, theme song.
Young and the Restless, what's that, like, soap opera?
Yeah, it's a soap opera.
Where was this, Pony? Where was this? Was this Minneapolis or St. Paul?
It was Plymouth.
And where's Plymouth?
It's kind of close, like, Plymouth is like a western suburb in the Twin Cities.
Okay.
And it's like 15 minutes from Minneapolis, 15, 20.
And in the house, you're saying the only musical instrument was a guitar that no one played.
No one played. My brother actually ended up, like, selling it. But then my dad bought me my first guitar when I was 12.
When you were 12. So, what about before that in grade school? Were you in the choir? Were you in the marching band?
I was in choir, I played the violin for a short period of time, and then I played the flute for a short period of time. Okay. And that was because my parents didn't want to, we had to rent the instruments, it was expensive.
Yeah.
So they're deaf, they didn't have, like, high earning jobs. It's kind of an anomaly that we ended up over in Plymouth. But we did.
What was the first record you bought with your own money?
It's so weird, but I bought it because of the cover. It was this
dropped out. I didn't hear you. Go ahead.
It was really weird. Like, I bought this tape from, like, a holiday grocery store when they had that section, and I bought this tape of this band called Shock Paris, which was like this metal band. And I don't know. I thought it was, like, the coolest thing ever. And then that was the first, like, actual album that I bought.
And what was the first gig you went and saw?
I saw the Steve Miller Band in the mid-90s.
Right. Take the Money and Run.
Take the Money and Run.
Dallas.
Yeah.
I think he started off as a bass man for Boz Scaggs. back to Ryan. Ryan, did you do the thing, like, after school with your buddies, the garage band, the basement band, bedroom band?
Yeah. I started that even in high school.
That's what I'm talking about. Like after school, after. In the afternoon, you know, when school lets out, not after you went to school.
Right. Got it. Yeah, I was totally doing that. Garage bands. We were playing the local venues, like 7th Street Inch.
Where did you practice?
We practiced at different, like, we'd move it around to whoever's parents' house would let us practice without getting in trouble in some way or another. So it would move around from band member.
And you got a guitar and an amplifier by this time, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was probably the drummer's pad because they don't want to have to move all the time.
Yeah, right. Except it usually was, but like my parents had his drum set in the basement for a while because I forget what happened exactly, but I know we got into trouble with, you know, police would get called just because like we're loud and
complain.
So we moved it there, and I know we moved to different, we went to our bass player's house for a while too. So it kind of moved around, basically whoever could tolerate it as long as, you know.
Now, did you guys just practice or did you end up doing some gigs?
We did gigs, yeah.
What was the first gig like?
Well, I remember our first gigs were doing the new band nights in the Twin Cities. So we played the 7th Street Entry new band night. And I remember the Batson Brothers. I don't know if you know the... oh, man, I'm blanking on the name of their band. Pony, what was it? It was the Conkers, but they had the other, the Batson Brothers. What was their band? Well, anyway, they're from a local band here, punk band that you probably have heard of, like their era of Husker Du. But those guys kind of ran the new band night. And when you're underage, they kind of just like kick you out right after you're done. So it's like you couldn't hang out, really couldn't watch other bands once you were done. It was fun, though, because it was such a... you know, story venue, like, from the Twin Cities. So it was cool.
You're saying this was your first gig or it's one of your first gigs?
That was one of our first gigs. We might have done, there was another local, like, there are a couple of all-ages venues that that aren't around anymore that we used to play. And I don't remember which one came first, but that was...
Now, did you play your own songs or were you copying off records?
We were mostly playing our own music. We would do some covers sometimes, but mostly our own stuff.
Were you part of the songwriting team?
Yeah. That was, like, always an important thing to me from the get-go of, like, picking up an instrument. That's kind of why.
Ryan, can you remember the first song you wrote?
Yes, I can. I mean, I remember, I have a vague recollection of the first song I ever wrote.
Well, why don't you tell me?
Really bad. It's really bad.
You want to know a bad one, you should hear the first one I wrote. In fact, get this, because I'm from the, you know, I'm 13 in 1970, so I'm a 70s. And no one in San Pedro wrote their own songs.
Okay.
I ended up writing one. It was called Mr. Bass, King of Outer Space, and it was about doing a bass solo and blowing the rest of the band off the stage.
I like that. That sounds like a good...
Well, obviously, bass player had some issues. Remember, this was the early 70s and shit. But only one fucking song. And in fact, I never told anybody for years because I was so embarrassed. Tell me about yours.
Oh, you got mine beat. Mine's lame. It is called, I think it's called Out on My Own. And it was just like, I'm trying to think what it sounded like. I don't know. I don't have a guitar that I could play it for you probably, but I don't think you'd want that kind of torture. It's just like D, C, and G, and D, and it's like...
Well, were you trying to tell a story, or were you trying to make an anthem? I mean, what was going on?
I was trying to tell a story and make an anthem at the same time.
Okay.
It was a failed anthem.
Look, you got to start somewhere. Do you just jump on the skateboard and start doing ollies?
Yeah, right.
Right? What about you, Pony? Did you get into after school, you know, doing a band in the garage and a basement?
Yeah. Yes, I did. I met some kids I went to Wayzata High School, and I met these kids at Minnetonka High School, and they were like these goth punk kids, and I fit in really well with them. And I played in their basement, and I started playing bass.
Oh, you were a bass player, huh? You didn't tell me about that.
In the called Hermaphrodite Whore.
Okay. So what was your, I'm curious, what's your first bass?
My first bass was this, like, red Ibanez. It was cheap. I mean, I got the amp and the bass for, like, $350.
What was the amp?
It was a Crate.
Okay, yeah, the Econo Fender, like 115 or something?
Yeah, so it was 115. Okay, yeah.
Easier to carry. So what was, and you were in a band, in a goth band. What were they called? Whore?
Hermaphrodite Whore.
You guys are teenagers, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you about the material. Were you writing original stuff or copying off records?
We were writing original tunes. They sounded.
See, that's what I love about people after the movement. You know, there was no more of this shit where you just copied off fucking records.
Yeah.
You can't believe what it was like before the movement. And that's what. I mean, the best guy in Pedro was the guy who could play Black Dog the best. It wasn't about using music as expression. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was fucked up times. You gotta understand, the movement wasn't about a beats per minute or a haircut or even funny names. It was about just trying to let your freak flag fly.
Yeah.
Okay. So what was, so were you part of the songwriting team in your band?
Yeah, I usually always, in every band I've ever been, it's always been like I wrote a song or two. I got my like one or two.
You're like the George Harrison, he gets one song a record.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
I heard that's really why the Beatles broke up. Nothing to do with Yoko. Yeah, I think it's in the Martin Scorsese film on George.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, because rumors about the evil woman destroying the rock band, right? I think that was bullshit. It was boys destroying their own band. We're at the end of the first hour. October 7, 2020 edition of Watt for Pedro Show. Special guests, Ryan and Pony. Hold tight for hour two. October 7, 2020. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
I lost some dope that I can't retrieve. I need to get high like you can't believe. But I lost it somewhere, well, town. And now my Jones is coming down. What I lost would have gotten me through the night. I'd have been feeling good all right. But in my head, I got a demon growling. And on my back, that old monkey's howling. Getting the shivers and the cold, cold sweat. That ain't half as bad as it's gonna get. I'm telling you, brother, this thing ain't funny.
Show. We start off the second hour with Ryan and Pony doing Fast As I Can. Then Sam Bennett out of Tokyo with Junkie Heaven. Flying Vipers from their brand new record, Gesho. Reggae, so some bass there. Huh? Bass comes first and that stuff. Guided by Voices in the very second. Much respect, Bob Pollard. Have a Nice Life, Guggenheim Wax Museum. Bullets out of bullets or balloons out of Spokane with Maroon 6. Maybe it's about a band, huh? Or a movie. And Ryan and Pony with Start Making Sense, which is not the Talking Heads movie.
It's not.
It's kind of the antithesis. So yeah. When we were off air, people, Ryan was enlightening me the fact that Twin Cities had all kinds of bands going. In fact, some of his teachers were blown away by all the activity. And they were probably around my age. And people from my time, it is a trip how nowadays everybody is using music as a way to express themselves, all kinds of expression, but not as afraid. And also to try and make your own and not just copy off records. And so how did Ryan Pony... I mean, I'm kind of jumping. I know you ended up doing a bunch of stuff, but I want to talk about your project here because, you had your first bands, both you and Pony, and then somehow you met in a minivan?
We did. We met in a minivan. We were on tour with our mutual friend, Mark Malman. He's a Minneapolis songwriter, singer, piano player, indie rock guy. Pony was playing bass, I was playing guitar on this tour, and Peter Anderson, who played drums in, he's the drummer of Run Westy Run, you brought up the Westies, he was in that tour van too.
Well, one of the drummers, the drummer I'm talking about was another man.
Oh, are you talking, yeah, you're probably talking about, blanking on his name, but I know him.
Me too, it's really ridiculous. I took them on two tours.
Awesome, he's great, cannot think of his name, but... So this is the current drummer of Run Rusty Run. He was in that same tour van, and here we are, ironically, years later, all playing together. He was the drummer on the Ryan and Pony album.
Do you know they had a tour boat that was a fucking ambulance?
Yeah.
And they found a fucking, on the border, they went to a little checkpoint, and they found a mota seed, and they impounded and took that, left them stranded.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, is that bullshit? Good old days, huh? Right.
Yeah. Yeah, they have kind of a notorious tour van now. I actually just saw one of them driving it down the road a couple weeks ago. It's like, it's unmistakable, but, yeah, that's crazy.
Well, for one thing, you guys' weather is pretty harsh on tour vans.
Yeah.
Because you salt the roads to make them safe, and it eats up the metal.
Yeah, tears up the, yeah, rust.
So you back. Know what you're saying is you were sideman.
We were both sidemen. At that time, I had a
side
band
people, we should
called the Melismatics. So we were kind of, in Minneapolis, everybody's in 20 bands. Like, that's just how it is here.
Yeah,
so now, is it like, there's a lot of people making music, but there's a lot of people collaborating in multiple projects. So
taking turns. Sometimes you're taking direction. Sometimes you're giving direction. I think that's really healthy, Ryan.
Yeah, I think it is too. I think it was, you know, and so we were both sidemen for a friend. And
let me give you an example. You can't learn everything being the boss. And then if you're always a sideman, you get the sidemanitis, right? A bunch of frustration.
Yeah.
So I think it's healthy to take. Yeah.
You're right on. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. For sure. So we both had our own band. She had a band called 100 Flowers. I had the Melismatics.
100 Flowers. You know, that was the Urinal's name here. We had a punk band from the 70s in a Hollywood scene. They were called the Urinals, and they changed their name to 100 Flowers because they thought they could get more gigs. They didn't, so they're called Urinals again.
I like Urinals
better. They told me they got the 100 Flower name from, because they were big, Urinals were huge influence on Minuteman. And they said they got it from a Mao Zedong book.
Yes, that's exactly why the lead singer named the band the 100 Flowers was because of the Mao Zedong book. And we ran into issues like, oh, there's already another band that was named that. And we kept trying to change the name, kept trying to figure something out.
The album cover has 100 Flowers, I think.
I think it does, yeah.
And in fact, Amphetamine Reptile, which is near you guys, right? They've released some Urinals and 100 Flowers stuff. So back to your thing. You're both working for this guy, and you're touring together.
Then the band that I was in, the Melismatics, we were looking for a new guitar player very abruptly. And Pony came up as a suggestion, and she joined our band, the Melismatics. And she started off in that band basically as like filling the shoes of, you know, previous guitar player. So she was learning his parts, singing his background vocals and whatnot. And then when we were making our first album with her, which would have been our, that would have been 1, 2, 3, I think our fourth album. Then the producer making the album he saw Pony as an asset that we weren't fully utilizing yet. And he kind of saw it as like the band X, like where you should have the two, like the male-female vocals going simultaneously. So then he started putting Pony on the spot in the studio, encouraging her to sing parts that, you know, that I would have sang before. And then she started singing. We started working on trading off vocals, singing in unison. And that was really the start of us working together in that way.
Oh, you're talking X, John Doe and Exene.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's a band out of Holland called The X, but it's spelled E-X.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm talking John Doe. Yeah.
Both are good bands.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to check out the other X. I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah, they're kind of like a Minuteman kind of band out of Amsterdam from old days. I think 80 or 79 or something.
Yeah.
X2 is very, you know, early in the Hollywood scene. That's interesting. So it was the X angle.
It was, and it was like an outsider, you know, as our producer on that album, seeing that in what we were doing, that was what we should try. And we thought it worked, like we really liked it. So that's kind of the start of Pony and I co-leading, co-singing together. And then we made a few more albums at the Mellon
Cabin. What was his name? I'm curious. The producer.
He just was like.
So what was his name?
His name. John Fields.
Okay. So you got to give this guy some credit then.
Oh, yeah. We still work with him. He mixed Moshi Moshi, the Ryan and Tony album. I work with him all the time. He's amazing. He's phenomenal. I mean, we owe him tons of gratitude, you know, for everything. So, yeah, no doubt.
You know, but this was Melismatics, right?
Yeah.
I want to play Close to the Vest here, but I'm curious, where'd that name come from?
So the name of that band came from literally, we had the first band of the first gig for that band booked before we had a name. And there's a paper here called the City Pages. It's like one of our local weekly rag. And they have to list like the band names and the clubs. And we booked the show and didn't have a name yet. And then I got a call this day, like saying, you know, this is it. You gotta give us your name. And I was in school at the time and there was a vocab test. And I was like, well, I'm just going to like pick a vocab word and use that. And then I'll change the name to something better when I think of something else. And so I put my pencil down on this word, melismatic, which means in music, it's a melisma is a run of notes that you sing the same lyrical syllable. So it's like this music term, and it had nothing to do with anything other than a random, you know,
it had some music.
Yeah, it had a musical reference, and ironically, like, we later found out we were doing melismas all the time. Because if you ever go like, whoa,
yeah,
or whatever.
Right. It's not literal words, but it's like scat singing.
Yeah.
Here, I want to play that, okay?
Stay with me. Thank you very much. That song was for Mr. Jim Jones.
We'll be right back. like a pessimist.
Pedro Show, Close to Vest from the Melismatics. Respect the Road from Bombus Prendon, D.C. from the early 80s. Punk as a Doornail Roof Rack. Tollum with the Assorted American Flavors. Home and Garden. King John live. Cleveland. Tony and Scott from Peru. Now out of England with Smear Test. Finally, Puzzle Missing Pieces. The Melismatics featuring John Auer?
Yeah.
How'd that happen? Well, shit, we're at the end of the second hour. You have to tell me. People, October 7, 2020 edition of Watt Pedro Show, special guest, Ryan Poehn. Hold tight for hour three. October 7, 2020. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Love. someone said I've been in this cave for about 40 years or so. So I jumped out of this sandy man kind of existence that has been a long hibernation incubation. Information for matriculation, manipulation, yeah. So I went out on the road to go up ahead in some hippies in a microvan. Well, they weren't really hippies. You see, they were sickies. Yeah, and they were asking me about my tape collection days. 'Cause you see, the local alibi was having a debate whether I existed in the beginning when I came from the fossil fuel of a naked outer space lizard that would could have been put there by a student this year. Or maybe one of the tribes. Anyway, it was inscribed on the petroglyphs as I headed out of town. Yeah, I came to the top of Central and I floated down. Thing. but what do I know? Well, I'll tell you this, I know for a fact that I ain't gonna be no key collector no more. No, I'm gonna take this tape from the Berkey police. You know the yellow kind when there's a dead motherfucker on the floor. Well, that's gonna be you if you ask me about my tape collection anymore. No, I ain't gonna be no tape collector no more. 'Cause I never traded, but I didn't make it. But look at all your shit on the floor. We left little ribbons of tape, but you leave a litter of electronic microchip rusting for give some infection that's already happened once before. Yeah, 'cause it's coming around, baby. Don't ask me why my frown, 'cause you know, yeah, you know why. I ain't gonna be a tape collector, and I'll show you the door, because you see, I ain't no tape collector no more. Ain't gonna be no tape collector no more. No, 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 I ain't gonna be a fucking tape collector or trading this thing from a Grateful Dead show that you fucked your now wife, ex-wife, excuse me, and whose son just was killed in a murder just out the door. 'Cause it all happened once before, and that's why I ain't gonna be a tape collector no more. Oh, I ain't gonna be, ain't gonna be, I ain't gonna be your tape collector no more. No, I ain't gonna be your tape collector no more. Yeah. No, I ain't gonna be your tape collector no more. And if you try that again, you'll be heading out the door. That's why I ain't gonna be a tape collector no more. Ain't gonna be no tape collector no more.
Show. Start third hour off with Come Find Me by Ryan and Pony. Crane was styling Not Your Tape Collector No More from the last Reptilian Brothers. Pops on there. Lewis Cole after that, Last Time You Went Away. And Starry Eyes, Ryan and Pony. Yeah, I saw this title. You know, you can't copyright a title.
I know.
Do you know of the other Starry Eyes?
Yeah, there's a pop song, Starry Eyes, yes.
Rocky Erickson.
Yeah.
And it's incredible, and he does a duet. There's several versions of it. It's a great song. So when I played it, I thought, did these guys cover that? Nope, just same title. Yeah, that's okay. You guys got your own version. It's a good version, too. So look, I want to explain John Auer from the Puzzle Missing Pieces.
Yeah. So John Auer is, like, many people might know him from the Posies and also the second incarnation of Big Star. He produced that album that's from, and he guested on a couple of the tracks, okay, too.
Who's
and
the he's guy been who's kind always of playing from that band? Ken Stringfellow. He's always out on the road. Great musicians. I think they're Northwest guys.
Yep, they're from Seattle originally. Now I think they're all over they're like in different countries now,
Every cat in that band can play like a motherfucker. I mean, they're great. I think maybe Mr. Stringfellow helps out the REM guys.
He did, yeah.
So, this record here, you know, it's what kind of time it is, right? It's no tour time.
It is.
So, are you getting ready to write another album in the meantime? Everybody's working on the plan B right now, right?
Yeah, totally. We're always working on stuff. I mean, there's, like, even from the album that came out, Moshi Moshi, I had 75 songs that I was working on for that album. And then this small number actually makes it on. And then I think when quarantine kind of started here in Minneapolis, like in St. Paul, I had for a while, things got really busy again. So I don't have a lot of free time anymore. But when I did have this little transitional period where I was home more and things had slowed down, I was writing a bunch of other songs. So I had a whole like quarantine batch of songs. So, I mean, yeah, it's weird. Yeah, no tour time. It's like, it's so weird and it's sad, you know, but you got to reinvent and you got to figure out how to make it way in the modern age.
Get creative. Are there a lot of things expected of you guys? Do you feel that kind of pressure, kind of weight?
Yes, we do. There's a lot, you know, like just, yes. I mean, I don't know how to answer other than a definite yes. You feel pressure, like you got it. Because the old model is down for the count and people are trying to figure out how to make things work. And you work with a bunch of other people and everybody is kind of reliant on each other. And it just makes a weird dynamic. I mean, you know, like I said, you know, like you were saying, it's creativity. Like you got to.
The creativity I'm way into. But what about this word, H-Y-P-E?
Hype. Yeah.
I didn't even want to say it because it's hard to deal with, right? It's jive.
Yeah.
And has the Ryan Pony, you guys, I know the sitch, okay, but what about that stuff?
About the hype, yeah. Well, I feel like we just try to focus on...
Yeah, of course. I know. You don't want to like be stomped down by it, but you're aware of it because it seemed like that was more from the days of the big record label. But there is still that kind of thing.
Nowadays
they want you to bring in a lot of people at the gigs, but there's no gigs, so that doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, it's just a different kind of thing. I think it's like, you know, you do.
Here's a band I can give you an example from Twin City. Shakespeare.
True Shakespeare?
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of weight was put on them, pressure.
Yeah.
I had one of the guys on the thing, you know, it's many years later, and super creative cat. And, you know, that stuff is such a momentary thing, right? And here it can, like, deform and twist up and make stupid shit, right?
Oh, yeah, totally, totally. I know what you're getting at. I think I understand what you're getting at. And we've tried to not worry about the hype or worry about trying to conform. There are times in the past where I feel we did feel that. And I never feel like it results in anything good at all.
Yeah.
So, after making so many albums and being in so many different bands, one thing that I think is so true is like all you can really do is try to do things that you think are good and you are happy with. And don't like try to please anybody because ultimately it's the work suffers. All you do is like compromise.
There's less people and less chefs in the kitchen with this project, you know, so it's easier for us to make what we want to do. Before it's like just tons of opinions coming at you from all different angles and you're just like,
Yeah, like leave me alone, give me a break.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just frustrating.
That's one good thing about, remember when you guys were younger and you had your little bands? No pressure, right? You let the freak flag fly.
Yeah.
And what, you graduate to this other world with all the bullshit reigns supreme?
Yeah, right.
You earn that privilege?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and totally. It's ridiculous. Like, so I think that was one reason why in this album I really wanted to produce it too, because I just didn't want to. We've only worked with great producers, so like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not like John, who we were just talking about, phenomenal and really good insight. But like, and John Auer, I mean, phenomenal. Ed Ackerson, the late Ed Ackerson, another phenomenal musician producer. We've only been really lucky in that department, but. I just like the less amount of pressure, the less amount of, as Pony said, cooks in the kitchen. It's like just kind of wanted to represent what we were doing at the moment and not have it be really like influenced too much in any other way. So in a way, it felt like making an album back in high school, you know?
Yeah, you know, you gave me a song to play from Dave Perner.
Yeah.
Okay, let's play that.
I told you I love you.
Watt for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. I told you, from Soul Asylum, and that's where you're taking direction, that Dave Perner shot caller. Good guy. Heaven Channel Season 2, Album 6, Part 2, from Galaxy. These are cats, Raquel and Jared, out in the Joshua Tree. 18 albums they made during this lockdown. So they ain't sitting on their hands.
Yeah.
And then finally, Cinematic, Ryan and Pony. Sometimes writing songs is kind of cinematic, huh? It's like making your own little movies.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's trippy that way. Maybe it's even closer than writing a book.
Because, yeah.
You know, the image kind of trip, you know. And, so where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can go to ryanandpony.com. That's got a link to pretty much everything from there.
Yeah. So let's spell it for people. ryanandpony.com.
You got it.
Yeah,
that's great. And all the other telephone poles to hang your flyers on. But you got your own fanzine, huh? You got your own website. I thought that would be the future. Everyone would have their own fanzine. They wouldn't hang out at all these corporate things, but I guess I was wrong. But you guys, you're staying faithful to those ethics. Because there's no filter, right? If you want to put something on your site, it's your site. Yeah. You don't have to worry. Let that freak flag fly. And how long did it take to make the record?
Well, you know, it depends on how you look at it. Because I joined Soul Asylum in 2016. And in 2014, the Melismatics put our last album as that band, which the band's not broken up. But we took a hiatus because we had been on tour nonstop for like a decade. And we were just getting really, really burnt out. So we took a break and we still wanted to make music. And a lot of these songs have been recorded at that point. So this goes back to probably, I'd say 2015, 2016. Okay. And then when I joined Soul Asylum, I was on tour a lot. And then Soul Asylum started making the album Hurry Up and Wait, which that song you just played is from. Yeah. And then I got so busy, that kind of got put on somewhat of a hold.
You did it in chunks in between your other work.
Yeah, so it's not like we were working on it nonstop for 4 years.
Yeah.
But it ended up taking 4 years to make it because of the kind of the gap. I mean, it had been almost done for a long time. And when COVID hit, Soul Asylum was on tour in support of that new album. And then we got sent home. Tour was done. And so I had a couple weeks where we were like just back home. We're trying to figure out what we're going to do. And I had been...
we could finish the album.
Yeah, exactly. It was like they had been waiting for that album to be turned in for a long time. So I'm like, well, you know, this is ridiculous. It's been 4 years. I'm like, here you go. There's the record.
That's great. And
almost done. We just had to like do
this.
When it
rains lemons, make lemonade. I'm very proud of you, Ryan and Pony. Thank you so much for being on the show. It means a lot to me. I want you to keep on keeping on. I don't sound like you're moaning too much, you know. I know it's a bad sitch, but we try to get creative about it. When you get some new music, though, will you please come on and let's talk?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. People, it's been the October 7, 2020, this Watt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.